tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. Oh, and today we have just an incredible, incredible episode. We are speaking with the fantastic Mike Phillips of the Urban Cat League, who many of you know. He's interviewed me several times for the show, for my own show. He's been the interviewer, which has been fantastic. And then we also have Gloria Murley here, who is a retired captain of Rikers Island Correctional Facility. And we are going to be talking all things Rikers Island Cat Rescue. Gloria is creating a feral cat sanctuary on the island in connection with the Inmates Program Department. There's a plan of TNRing 300 plus cats. So, Gloria, I'd like to welcome you to the show. Before we get started talking about this great project that you have going on, can you tell me a little bit about how'd you get to be passionate about cats?
Well, I can tell you about that. It's quite a long time because it goes back to probably over 20 years ago, more than that even. There was an officer that worked on Rikers, and he used to take care of some of the cats by the jail, and he retired. And he said to me, "You have to promise me that you will do this and follow through on these cats." It was about 10 or 15 at the time in that vicinity. And I said, "All right." So I made the promise. And from that point on, it just mushroomed. And I said to him, "You know, I love cats. Dog has always been number one. But now I can't even say that they are number one. They're both on the same level." So we became interested in the first thing that really melted my heart was I had gotten a little kitten that was caught in the razor ribbon. I brought it to the vet, and the vet said to me, "This is a drop in bucket. You're just beginning." And that was true. So from there on, my passion for them is compassion. And that's the best way I can put it.
I love it. Passion for compassion. I think that's a wonderful phrase. And I think that's just great. And I'm sure every cat and kitten has a story. When I was running the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society, people used to ask me, "How do you find stories to write your fundraising letters and your appeals and all that?" And I'm like, it's not finding the stories, it's choosing the stories. That's the hard part. And I was always in paralysis over which cat to profile. So every day you're seeing another story, and everyone out there is seeing another story out there. But this is a big story. This is an incredible story. And my sense is there have been cats on Rikers Island for quite a while. Mike, can you share with us what the history of cats on Rikers Island has been?
Well, I can remember the day I was sitting at my computer, the beginning of the internet, I got this email. It was something about cats and razor wire and something in Rikers Island, and it was all blown out of proportion. I thought, well, we have to get to the bottom of this. Flash forward, we got our way through to the DOC through the wife of a council member who was really interested in pregnant women on the island, but she somehow got us in. And Gloria had been working behind the scenes. I had not met Gloria. She was working with really progressive, a woman that was working there with, Gloria, tell me, what was her name?
Kathy Raymond.
Kathy Raymond, yeah. So between Kathy and this sort of introduction, we got a meeting of the commissioners and people on Rikers, and we're sitting around this table. At that point, I was the president of Urban Cat League, and Ruth Sharp was there, Brian Cordes, we were all there. And we had to pitch TNR, and they were very receptive. The ASPCA agreed. They thought, well, that's a slam dunk. Rikers is an island. We just go through there once, TNR, and it'll be done. And this was 20 years ago. So I met Gloria that day. She took us on a tour of the island to like 15 different areas where there were distinct colonies. Rikers is about, is it 400 acres, Gloria? It's a big...
I think that's about right, Mike.
Big island. Yeah. And so a lot of different locations, some more remote, this and that. So we went in and it took two, it was funny. I was president of Neighborhood Cats at that point. Subsequently, a group of us split off to work in Hell's Kitchen and we founded Urban Cat League. I went to vet tech school. And by the time we actually trapped the first cat, Brian and his team that were out trapping cats, I had gone to vet tech school and was working on the ASPC van as a vet technician. So I was able to be a part of it because it was officially in the beginning. It was a Neighborhood Cats project. But as the story unfolds, I think what's going to be interesting for people, when you come in contact with a large governmental body like the Department of Corrections, Gloria really understood from the beginning, you don't burn any bridges, you don't step above someone, you have to find out who's the right person to talk to. They say no, 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 and you just patiently say thank you for your time and you try another angle, you find the right person. Some people retire. You have to wait years sometime for the right person to retire, and someone else that was in the room that you noticed was sort of responsive and listening to what you were saying, but they weren't in power, and you think, gee, boy, I hope that's the next one in line, you know? And you find out who that person was, and you, you know, without outstepping, it's such a balancing act. And Gloria stayed in the game for 20 years, and we now, I'll let Gloria tell, but we now have a commissioner in place. One meeting, we explained TNR. We said, you know, we need a sanctuary. We need the cats apart from this sprawling island where they disappear and there nobody knows. The TNR was very difficult. We did one big sweep with the ASPCA, but there's so many remote areas and there were difficulties allowing trapping. One of the commissioners said, you can trap between 11 and 2 in the afternoon. You have to have an escort. You can only do it on weekday. You know, it was like it was impossible to fit to get to 100% TNR. There was just no way. And now the current commissioner, finally, after 20 years of back and forth and back and forth, and Gloria walking that tightrope always. And she's Gloria will tell you, she's been retired for many years and she's kept that.
Over 10 years.
But she built the relationships. And she had people in every corner that she knew she could call. Well, I'll let her tell that part. But now the commissioner, James Saunders, one meeting, yes, whatever you need. They had a softball field, a huge softball field, which is they're not using. So we're adapting that to a sanctuary where we can properly care for these kids, properly vet them. It'll be a Disneyland for cats, hopefully, you know, lots of stimulation. They won't be behind bars. Oh, it's interesting that Rikers Island Cat Rescue, RICR.org, they have a t-shirt on the website, let meow, with a picture of a cat. But I'll head it over to Gloria to tell you what's going on now. I'm happy to jump in if there's a question, but that's just sort of the lightning round, how it just all got started. But that first round, I don't know how many cats, was it 300 cats at that first trapping?
I think the first round, it was every 2 weeks we were trapping 25 cats because that was what the van could handle. So, and at the end, I think it was actually over 500 because it was the largest trap, neuter, and release in the United States. At that time, I was told, not just for a facility, because they weren't doing it in jail, but it was the largest at one point to do that many cats. So I would think in the beginning, I would say, Mike, I don't know if you agree with me, I would think there was definitely over 1,000 cats on Rikers Island, I would believe, way back when we started.
I wouldn't even be able to tell you. Now, I've been out to Rikers many, many times. You can imagine the red tape, you know, days in advance, you have to request access, your driver's license, your car license plate, everything they need to know. And then you're allowed to visit with an escort. And I did tour all the various locations a few times, but that I couldn't. Oh, we just saw cats everywhere.
So, Gloria, let's talk about that was the first initial wave of spay neuter, but obviously it was not to 100% sterilization on the island. My understanding, what year did that first big trapping round happen? Are we talking 20 years ago, 15?
2000, I would say 2002.
2002.
It was after the Trade Center, yes.
So 23 years ago, we had this massive trapping. And then after that, how was the program managed?
Well, basically, we tried to manage it as best we could. We came in and they were doing like let us do periodic trappings like every 6 months. And then, you know, with the change of climate within the department, they put so many constraints on us that we couldn't get out there. So it was basically whatever we could do. And it wasn't easy to get actually the ASPCA van. It became a little more difficult to get the van. They were coming to Rikers, but then for a period of time, they didn't. And we just continued the best we could. But it's very difficult on that island, as Mike said, because of the how big it is, and that there are 8 facilities on there, and then annexes like Powerhouse and different areas of workmen's where they have, you know, civilian plumbers and different that. So there are so many places for these cats to hide. It's just not like you're going to one spot and they're under the buildings. They're all over the place. I mean, so it becomes a chore. So what we basically did in the beginning, and this is what Mike sort of do area by area. But over the course of time, like I said, with the changing of staff and the higher up, we couldn't get in there as much as we wanted to. And then volunteers, we have a problem because, like Mike said, security, there's a security process to bring on people. So if we were going to trap, it had to be well planned, bring people on, and really don't want to do a lot of people at one time in the belief that 6 trappers is good because, you know, it starts to get too confusing. Those cats are very smart. They're trap savvy. And we use drop traps. We use other things. We do the best we can to keep up with it. But it's really because of it's so big. So you can't cover it that easily. And then we have a problem now with actually having the spay neuter because ASPCA doesn't really send duvans anymore. They stopped that quite a while ago. So I think over time, even when I left the island, I still go back there. I'm there at least 4 days a week. And then I have like a handful of volunteers that help and a couple of trappers. But, you know, it's always the old thing. You do the best you can with what you have. So unfortunately, we reinitiated it. And the sanctuary, of course, is going to be the ultimate end, hopefully, of these cats where they can be caretaked and not be out there and, you know, have the right medical treatment. Primary, that's really a big thing, the medical treatment. Or the ones that are not spayed and neutered. And if you're not catching all of them, you're not going ahead because they repopulate. You only need 2 cats. That's what I tell everybody. How is that possible? You trap so many. But it is possible, and you know that. Mike knows that.
Yeah, Stacy said you only need Adam and Eve.
Yep.
I just wanted to, we don't want to give short shrift to the Humane Society, which is a much, much smaller operation in New York City than the ASPCA, but they have stood by Gloria for 20 years with vet care, emergency vet care. They've done it spay neuter when they can. They have a tiny facility compared to the ASPCA, but they have really hung in there. And also, I heard, Gloria, from Barry Hyman, he works on the island as an ophthalmologist. He's jumped in the cat operation, and he's working with people. They're building shelters and doing all kinds of things. I think he said, just keeping at it in each location, they think they're at over 90% spay-neuter at this point. So going into the sanctuary, as each cat is trapped and re-vetted, with an ear tip or not, and getting neutered, it'll finally, you know, get those last 10%, which will bring it under control.
You're actually using the sanctuary concept as a holding area from looking at as a targeted model, and understand that the sanctuary, you're not going to be returning them back out, but what you are doing by having that as that holding area option is, you know, ensuring that you're going to be making your best efforts to get those last cats. And then also fully understanding the extent of the landscape and the population and the situation and the wildlife, you're going to have a lot more control, but it also is going to take a bit more labor too in order to be able to make that happen.
Yeah, exactly. To your point, the cats were disappearing into the island. Whereas if we can get them all enclosed in the large sanctuary, any new cat that's hungry it'll come to the areas where people are, garbage cans. It'll come looking for food and they'll be able to be spotted. They won't be just disappearing into the wild in the island. And there was also a concern by feeding dry food all in 27 feeding stations you have around the island, I think. The wildlife was getting access to inappropriate nutrition for them. So this will help wildlife. There's also right across the water from Rikers Island is LaGuardia Airport. So large flocks of birds were coming in, landing right near the airport for this dry food. So we are helping birds, wildlife, and the cats will have a better quality of life. But it's something that interested the New York Community Trust. We've had a very, very hard time doing fundraising for this project because the Department of Corrections can secure the softball field. They've given trailers, which will outfit for kitchen and, you know, everything for the take care of the cats. We'll have an area, recreation area with, you know, all kinds of amenities for the cats. But fundraising has been very hard for it's going to be, you know, $100,000 to get this whole thing finished. The New York Community Trust was very interested in the overlapping, the benefit to birds, benefit to wildlife, cats, and also a program where the inmates would be trained in caretaking, the daily caretaking for the cats, which would open an avenue for them, an insight into animal husbandry, a possible employment post-incarceration, Animal Care Centers of New York, grooming. As you know, it's hard for post-incarcerates to get a job. And we would be doing training. We would train them. They wouldn't be going out on the island doing the actual TNR, but we would train them in TNR. We'd go through our whole Urban Cat League, a list of workshops, bottle feeding neonatal kittens, taming feral kittens. They could work in the sanctuary. They're low security inmates?
Or low classification.
Low classification. And they could, you know, work with the feral kittens. They could work and do all this. And it's giving them, if they have an affinity for it, a possible future employment.
If you work with cats, you need to understand feline leukemia. And there's no better place to start than at the 2025 Online Feline Leukemia Day Conference. Join us on Saturday, July 19th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time for a full day of expert-led sessions covering the latest research, care protocols, and strategies to support FELV-positive cats. Whether you're in rescue, sheltering, or vet med, this event is packed with expert talks, practical tips, and fresh insights to help you better care for FELV-positive cats. Can't make it live? No worries. Registration includes access to recordings and handouts. Sign up today at communitycatspodcast.com/FELV-day. That's communitycatspodcast.com/FELV-day.
TNR work isn't easy. You trap them, you neuter them, you release them back into a world that barely notices they're there. It can be exhausting. It can feel never ending. But the work you're doing, it matters, especially to the cats who rely on you. At Rescue Disinfectants, we see the work you do, the work few are willing to take on. Our powerful, vet-trusted disinfectants help you clean traps, carriers, cages, and litter boxes without the harsh chemicals that could harm the fragile lives you're fighting for. Let Rescue be there for them and for you. Visit rescuedisinfectants.com to help reduce disease risk and support better outcomes for community cats.
Want an easy grant opportunity for your animal organization? Maddie's Fund is giving away a $3,000 grant each month to one lucky Maddie's Pet Forum member. You'll automatically be entered to win each month when you start a new discussion, reply to a new post, or upload a new library resource. Learn more at forum.maddiesfund.org today.
I'm familiar with a couple of programs where there hasn't been a TNR program on site, but they have used inmates for foster care.
May come. We'll see. We're taking baby steps.
Yeah, baby steps. But I think there's actually been more progress on that side of the street than having a trap, neuter, return program. But the point you bring up, Mike, which is very interesting, is that I think it's safe to say we would call this a sensitive area. It's sensitive because it has a lot of environmental thoughts behind it. And it also has some structural challenges, meaning it's a prison. So there's a lot of challenges. It's not like you can just walk on over and see the kitties or whatever. There is policy, procedure, protection. There's a lot of other factors that you have to consider that you wouldn't necessarily consider if you're talking about feeding a group of cats behind a building in Hell's Kitchen. So I would call it a community cat sensitive area, which means we need to be very specific about what our goals and objectives are for the cats as well as for the overall sensitive area. And so the world is not black and white when it comes to cats, and we need to be able to be flexible in our solutions for each area. And even for this prison, this might be a model for Rikers Island, but maybe it's not a model for another prison facility in Kansas. And I would venture to bet a majority of our correctional facilities have cats. I would venture that is the case. And to say this is a starting point and this is a model that's going to be put in place for Rikers Island, this is the beginning. You can take it to Kansas and to see if Dorothy in Kansas, the Dorothy community cat out there in Kansas, living at a correctional facility out there, this model potentially could work, or maybe more of a traditional TNR model would work. So I do think, though, it is a great time to have this conversation around how do we handle community cat population situations in sensitive areas. And in this case, we're talking about correctional facilities. Gloria, as you look ahead towards this project, what do you think are your greatest challenges?
You know what? I don't know about the greatest challenge. My biggest challenge is just making sure that the welfare of these cats are taken care of. That's all I care about. I mean, I've been doing it many years and I love what I'm doing. I love the cats, and we have cats for adoptions. We have feral cats that are running around, but it's like you want to know that outcome is going to be good. And I'm positive, always been positive about this. And I think that the sanctuary is a challenge, but, you know, I have good people around me that are helping go in the right direction. I think that's a challenge. I think the trapping part of it is going to be a big challenge because it's not going to be easy. It's going to be time consuming. Working on the island that is secured, it is jailed, it's got razor ribbon on every facility, so the movement is a little more difficult, but it could be done. I think that's the challenge. And for us right now, our biggest challenge right now is feeding these animals, because like he said, Mike said, we have 27 feeding stations and with water, of course. And then we have an adoption center that has about 25 inside for adoption and maybe about 20 outside. So basically feeding these animals is always a concern for us. We live on to feed them. Right now we do by donation. That's all we do. And then we have to purchase with whatever funds we get. People send us stuff through Chewy and Amazon. We have wish lists. Apartment really doesn't, there's no funding for this. Let's put it that way. Absolutely none. They give us the building. They give us some of the builders on there that work on the island, have built us the shelters and done all that with scraps. The only place we are getting dry food from, and that's, if they have it, is Office of Emergency Management. And the end of the year, we'll get usually over 10,000 pounds of dry food that was earmarked for, say, any hurricane and all that they didn't use down south. And it's short expiration, but it's okay. I mean, we put it away and we use it, and we hope it gets us through the year. And that's not a give, but that is my biggest fear, the caretaking of these animals once we do get it. I think we're going to get into that sanctuary, no matter how we're determined to do it. I'm very determined to do it. I'll never, never desert these cats. It will never happen.
Spoken like a true cat caretaker and trapper. Boy, I've heard that line before, and I love it. I mean, I love it. They're your family. How can you not say that, right? You have shared hours and hours and hours of your life and your time with these cats and in this place. And I appreciate that passion that you have.
It's a huge passion that I have for them. In fact, 8 of them are living in my house. So I had set my limit at 5, but then I had a couple of stragglers that needed help. So right now, that's what I have here from Rikers.
I promise I won't tell anyone.
No, don't tell anyone. Please don't tell anybody. I don't want them to think I'm some kind of crazy lady with these cats running out of windows. No, they're well taken care of, and I live normally, trust me.
Gloria, I have an idea for you, and I'm looking at your website here quickly. So me, always being the fundraiser that I am, back in the day when Newburyport, when we had our 14 feeding stations, and then we had some other feeding stations on the periphery back when we had, we started out with 300 cats, but then it whittled its way down over time. But we did have a sponsor feeding station opportunity out there so that people would donate on a monthly basis automatically to help support the efforts of people taking care of the cats with those feeding stations. Or even we drilled it down as far as doing also a sponsor cat from the waterfront. We had so many people that were taking pictures of the cats. Even back then, this was all back in the 90s. So this was all like normal photography pictures. And we would, once or twice a year, we would mail a little update about each cat. And we would have, we would only take 6 or 10 cats that we would like profile and kind of track closely. And we'd have multiple sponsors for those cats as monthly donors to help raise donations for the supportive care of those cats. And it paid for food, it paid for the feeding stations, it paid for, sort of standard maintenance and care. It wasn't something that was going to pay for huge surgery costs, but at least right, it helped. It doesn't hurt. And it's with the monthly donation option, it's something that gets turned on and you don't have to like hustle it every month. It's just automatically there. And so I just throw that out there as a suggestion so that you get some regular donors to help and support you and for the cats out there. Because I know you have gotten some good press about this story out there. I forget where I saw you. This is how I found you. What type of coverage have you had about the cats out on Rikers Island?
We've had various, individual reporters come out to the island and see some different people that just approached us, just hearing about us online. So we've had some notoriety along the way, and it helped us tremendously. Sometimes you think nobody really looked, it's your thing, but there's people that are very interested in what we do and interested about all these animals that are out there that, are there, and they just need different things. So we're looking with the press coverage we have had, and I just want to touch upon something with the Humane Society of New York. They have been so wonderful. We're talking about they have been with us since the very beginning and still are. And although they're so small, they can't handle the amount we have, but they've been taking ill cats, giving them surgeries that nobody else would do. Big organizations have not been able to even offer anything like that. Dental issues, which everybody knows is tremendous. But other things other than that, we've had some tremendous work done by them. So I didn't mean to go off the topic, but I did want to comment about, how wonderfully the doctors and the staff are in that place. They're amazing.
And a shout out to Sandra DeFeo, who's been standing by
Rikers
for years and years and years. She's been what is her title? She's like the general director of
the director. She is the director.
SNY. Yeah. Terrific. I've known her since the beginning of TNR. From 1999, she was helping with TNR.
Collaborations and partnerships are just critically important, and being willing to work together. So it sounds like you have some really excellent relationships and partnerships together. And before we get ready to close, if you don't ask, you don't get, right? So, Mike, you said that this project needs $100,000. Is that what you said?
Yeah, we did get a grant from New York City Community Trust based on that overlapping benefit to the community. But we really want to make the cats comfortable. If anybody wants to go to RICR, Rikers Island Cat Rescue, RICR.org, and they can make a donation. And I think between the time of the podcast, we're going to put up a monthly donor appeal on that website.
I think, that's a great idea. So I know we just said this, but again, if folks are interested in becoming a donor or giving on the Amazon wish list that you have or other wish list, Chewy wish list, the website is ricr.org. And Gloria, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, you know what? I think anybody who's doing this just has to stay focused and stay with it and just try to interact with other people positively. You're not going to come across everybody that agrees with this, but arguing the point is not the way to go. You have to build these relationships, like you said, and stay focused on what you're doing and make it peaceful. And most people do understand if you take the time to explain something. And that's what it's all about.
Excellent. Well, Gloria and Mike, I want to thank you both for joining me today. And I am just so excited and thrilled to have you both back on the show to let us know how this project is going. I think it's very interesting. I think it's unique, but I also think it may be a model for other locations across the country. So thank you both for your time today. And I look forward to having you back on the show.
Thanks, Stacey.
Totally. Thank you.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.